Accession number 19048, reel 3.
Okay, that's Harry Borgman, and it's reel 3. You were just telling a story there, Harry, about valets and a horse on a tank or something.
Yes. It was jumping on the top of a tank to get away, and its buggy or vehicle behind had a young German officer on, wounded, who was on the tank, and I could see that he couldn't get on or off, you know, because it was terrible, and you could almost see his face as resignation, you know, I'll go. And it went right over the valet's gap and down, you know, and down and down. And I would really, of course, had a thing around my face, you know, covering my face to stop the stench. It was awful. And quite frankly, I don't know how we got out or through valet's gap. Mm. I don't remember, quite frankly.
You said you remember the vehicles going over.
Yes.
Bodies and things.
Yeah. And I don't know how we actually finally extricated ourselves from the valet's gap, but it was a hell of a do. Because I wasn't sick, quite frankly, but I had a thing wrapped around my nose all the time, completely. Couldn't stand it. Mm. But
was there, you spoke earlier about looting. In that situation, with all of that mechanics, machinery, people, items, I suppose, around, scattered, yes. Was there much looting then at that stage?
Of whom? By civilians or by military?
You tell me.
Well, not looting, in actual fact, but because the civilians couldn't loot. Well, presumably they could amongst themselves, you know, they could go in. But there didn't seem much to loot. It had, you know, been gone through, you know, and so on. Although I say I did manage a fur coat, a fur lining, and things like that, and Lugers, you know, Luger, I managed a Luger. And was it P-38? A small one, very, very nice, in actual fact. But unfortunately, that lot and things, everything like that, my brother died, and my father was ill.
When at this stage?
Yes, my brother died. Just after the valet's gap. My brother died, and my father was ill, and I was recalled home to deal with mother, you know, and so on.
Yes.
And I went back, and then came back to the unit, you know. And I forgot where they were then.
How long were you?
And found my stuff had been looted.
Oh, I see. So everybody became a looter.
I didn't get anything. No fur coat. No. No,
lost your fur coat then as well?
Oh yes, the fur coat went, everything went, everything, and cameras, you know, and things like that. Just one of those things, you know.
But how can you remember how long you were at home at that stage, Harry?
Oh, that stage it was, I went and travelled, hell of a job travelling, it was a problem travelling really. Probably about 11 or 12 days, just over.
Well, the valet gap was, valet's gap was about the 17th of August. If you were away for 11 days, it takes you
it wasn't quite after the valet's gap. It was quite some time after the valet's
gap.
It was quite some time. It was a winter time-ish because I know I wore an officer's raincoat, you know, that was a kind of raincoat thing, which I still, not got that, but I got one like that, right? No, that was later time. It's easy to get back.
I can remind you, if you like, what the battalion were doing around that time, and it might just jog your
memory.
That's
right. Yeah.
The battalion, after leaving the Falaise Gap, the Germans were then in pretty much full retreat.
That's right. Yes.
And you and the British Army and everybody else, the Americans and the Canadians, were chasing them across France and the Low Countries. But you eventually, or quite quickly, went over the Somme and the Seine.
Yes.
On your way up to Antwerp, and you finished up in Antwerp.
Oh, yes. That was nice. Yes. Antwerp was very, very nice. I wouldn't like it to go on record here what went on in Bexar Mivans.
Well, only tell us what you want to tell us, Harry.
No, better not. One of our chaps is a rather difficult. Actually, he's died since, but I wouldn't, you know. Mm. No. But really, in Antwerp, we had a very, very nice time, really. You could have girls who'd come with you, you know, in the back of the truck and travel with you. In fact, it was a problem that I had not having all the time a young woman somewhere in the thing being escorted about.
These were Dutch girls?
Yes.
This didn't happen in France?
No, yes.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Otherwise, it was quite a nice set of. I've been back there several times, in actual fact.
Looking for the same girl? Yeah.
Well, one, we used to have one who got dressed up as a soldier, in actual fact, in a place called Jono. Jono, you may have heard of him, not a big lad, you know.
This is Johnson again, isn't it?
Mm. He, you know. Turning one of the vans, you know. Still, it's one of those things, you know.
Can you remember?
We used to have geese, in actual fact. Did I ever mention?
You've not mentioned that.
Oh, no. We used to have geese. I worked on the basis of, you know, the walls of Rome were being guarded by geese. So we used to have two big geese. And pinned them down, you know, with their feet, you know, but so that they could wander around. Mm. And we got used to them in time. The only thing is, they made so much cackling and doing as we were walking most of the time, you know, ready for stand to. And it was just the ruddy geese wanting a feed or getting fed up with being staked out all the time.
Yeah.
But we used to have these, when we used to have to do a quick, you know, quick move, you know, a real quick move. You had to throw everything in, whatever thing like that. But the geese, of course, also went in. Oh, and it was a nightmare, you know, and so on. But we had some quite nice. In fact, in one place when we were going to Belgium and the last, getting a little further forward for the Belgian, Hitler tried to do a move coming, and he'd all the tanks.
Would this be the Ardennes?
Pardon?
Would this be the Ardennes?
Yeah, the Ardennes, right. That's right. He had all the tanks all lined up and everything like that, but no petrol, fortunately. And we had to quickly rush down there. That was the last big thing, actually, in the Ardennes. Quickly rushed down there, and first of all, one of our chaps, a sergeant as he was, same as myself, and he was in charge of a gun team and everything like that. But he always followed the comforts of the lads. Whatever they wanted, he always agreed to. Not what was the best thing for the army, you know, what you were doing. And we went on the Falaise Gap, it went down like that and then up like that. And along here were all old farmhouses.
This is on the top of a ridge?
Yeah, just ordinary, not farm holders, but they all had plots and all little bits of land and say two goats and something like that and then milk and whatever. And I remember one house was there, and I always through my binoculars looked everywhere before we ever went near any section and so on. And I thought, now this is too good to be true to be able to us to go on this ridge at this top end here, Valley's Gap, with the doings and doings, and then all forest over there. It's far too good to be true that there's not something in that forest over there, the Germans. But unfortunately, one of my pals, I say he was a sergeant, sergeant, who went first and took up position first. His gun was first to go, and his gun crew and everything like that. He immediately got settled and woofed her. And all we could bury, I remember, what did you say at a funeral? All we could bury was his hand. Just his hand. Oh, and his elbow with his three stripes. From here, that's all that was left of him.
Everything else had gone.
And we buried the thing, you know, and had a funeral sort of thing. And then, of course, we... Because he'd moved into a small house that was such an obvious position from anybody on the other side to see every movement that anybody in this one could go to, could do. And he picked, in other words, he went where the men wanted to go and be comfortable rather than the things of the, you know, what you should do for the...
And the German artillery, I suppose, already had that
all
free...
All watching, and all got the correct doings on it all along the line, because the minute he got nicely settled inside this little farmhouse and all that there, woofter,
immediately
down it came. And we buried just his arm in a grave, in actual fact. The rest of him, the rest of him was up a tree. Yeah.
Things, memories that stay with you forever.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we moved a little bit further forward along there, still looked at it, then, because then we could see, in fact, I could see when I went into one of the OPs, and you could see the actual glinting of sun on things that shouldn't be in trees, you see. In other words, the sun was shining through the trees onto the barrels of the whatever it was or whatever and so on. And so my gun crew didn't, when we were near that lot, we got into another little farmhouse with a couple who had left. I've always wanted to do something about that. I was sitting in their sitting room and doing and looking at a piece of furniture and thinking, oh, it's not so good, it's not, you know, it's nothing like that. And up slid out slid a little tray, part of this, like this.
Yes.
The bottom slid out. And there was a certain amount of money, you know, in Belgian francs, in paper money and so on. And I pocketed it because I thought, hey, the people had gone, somebody else went. And I have always worried, should I send some money to the mayor of that village, whatever it is, you know, to tell him. But I did this, but I never did in the end.
After all these years, Harry,
that's right.
The people,
it wouldn't mean
he
much.
Wouldn't know.
But also, I saw something that was absolutely devastating to me, as an artist, as a keen on art and so on. We then, that same evening, as we were going into the Belgian Arden thing, we first of all had to go to a sort of joining up place with the Yanks. They were all there before us in the palace. It was in the hunting palace of the King and Queen of Belgium. And all around in this beautiful, beautiful place with chandeliers and everything like that, and all around were cases, beautiful cases and everything like that, with the most fabulous porcelain you have ever seen. And the Yanks were busy, bashed to these beautiful cases, the casing is an own cost fortune, taking these out and switching these
throwing them
fabulous things, but trying to knock the candles off the chandeliers. The chandeliers, crystal chandeliers with imitation candles and so on and so on. Mm. And they were, of course, they were all blind drunk. And they went through the lot.
And you're thinking, what a waste.
Exactly. I was thinking what I could do if I could loot that and get that back home. Because it was unbelievable doings. But sorry, just before that, we just had to do something which was rather sad in actual fact. Going up to there, we were wrapped up in, two overcoats if you had to. It was freezing cold, and snowing and everything like that. And when we stopped, you'd go a few yards and you'd stop because the column itself will be there. Something crawled out from a bush or behind a rock at one side, what's that? Look down. And it was somebody, person on the ground, German uniform, down to death, where they were shadowed out, and so on. And he, and it was a wee big kid. Oh, he only looked about 18 or 19, or probably even 17 or 18, And he crawled out slightly. So-and-so. Blood all over him.
Over his chest.
Right through his chest. Oh, Christ, what do we do? So, in fact, I said, stop. Stop the vehicle, get him on the front. Sorry.
It's okay, Harry.
So we got him on the front on barbed wire and everything. Nothing else to do. You've done it wire. You've rolled a done it wire, laid flat to on the top front of your vehicle, so that you can take it off and unroll it, But we just threw him onto this thing. And he was about 17, if he was a day, And he was clinging to me, and because I know the edge of the thing, all the way, and had to go with it, in actual fact. And he pointed to a ring on his finger, Mutter, to give it to him. To give it to him, to give it to me, we finally managed to get him there, but all the way for about an hour and a half, I had him hanging around my neck. It was freezing cold, but probably good for him, but all he had was an ordinary jacket, overcoat or anything like that. He looked probably may have been in the bar or something, with a German thing, but he was in a hell of a state.
Did he survive?
He did to where we got to when the first thing was when we first came into this place where they were all throwing the plates. We said Red Cross and so on. And handed him over to some Red Cross, but it was American Red Cross. They could do what they liked and everything like that. I often wonder where he could be
sure
today.
We're wandering around here a bit in dates, aren't we?
Yes.
Because just to bring it up to where we are, you've been talking here about the Ardennes.
Yeah.
The Ardennes happened around Christmas time of 44, early January of 44, 45. Mm. But we'd left you earlier up in Antwerp, where you, which was a wonderful place, with the ladies, and those stories you were telling us. But I know, you see, I'll take it in a chronological sequence. I know that after Antwerp and before the Ardennes were some very serious places that you went to. For instance, I know that just after Antwerp, there was the Arnhem parachute drops.
Oh, yes.
And I know that the East Lancashires were involved that's keeping the corridor open at that stage. Mm. Does that ring any bells with you, Harry?
Not particularly, no. No. Just part of, you know, holding it and doing whatever, but no particular incidents that came out that reminded me, you know, so much about it.
Okay. What about a bit later on? There was a divisional attack. You were part of the 53rd Welsh Division.
53rd Welsh Division.
And there was a divisional attack on a town in Holland called St. Ergenbosch.
Oh, yes, Ergenbosch, yes, yes.
Which was around the third week of October, something like, of 44. Does that ring any bells with
you? No, that doesn't. I mean, it was just a normal work that went on, you know, with the advancing and so on up at Ergenbosch. You know, does riot, it does bring the name to me, you know. But I don't recollect any particular incidences that happened then, in Ergenbosch.
You do remember going into the town, into the city at all?
Oh, yes. Yes, in Ergenbosch. What did we... Oh, we got quite well in with people there. I'm not sure whether that's where I had my fur coat lined. My coat lined.
By Dutch people?
By Dutch in the, you know, in the farmhouse. They all slept in the walls. Mm. And things in the in the village, and that's where they sat round the bonfire, and the big lads would come out and help with the guns. Wheels and everything like that, because they were so big and healthy and whatever. I often wonder where they would be nowadays. I think we'd probably give them couple of silk stockings, or not silk stockings, they didn't have silk stockings then, but things that we'd managed to find in shops on the way, you know.
Some of your perfume and your combs.
That's right, that's right, that's gone. Right, from the doings, yes, without a shadow of doubt. Mm.
So, well, that was October. In November, the weather was getting...
cold,
a miserable, foggy. And I know that the battalion then were around the Mars, on the banks of the Mars.
Mars.
Any recollections of that area?
Not particularly. Only incidentally, not there. Where was it? Where was it about? Where I handed over the Prince of Lip to Colonel Cetera.
The Prince of
Lip. In fact, he was married to Queen Juliana of Holland. And early in one morning, we were right on the borders. We were right on the border of Germany and Greece. Yes, it was. It was the border. And we're right on the border, and we heard a chun 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 vehicle coming from the distance. So when it arrived, it was a big black sort of saloon car, but the wheels were enormous, you know, doing as meant for going over a rough country. So I arrested this chap. Oh, which can't, sort of, or words to that effect, you know, I couldn't, I didn't understand a word he said, and that's right. You can't, and of course I showed him that I just could, you know, and for two pins I'd give him a kick in the lily shins as well. I am, who are you? Well, what you've been doing, I thought, somebody who's escaping, maybe, or something, or doing some looting or something.
Yes.
So I thought, in that case, have a look in the car, what's in the car? And in other words, if it had been some live geese or something, that would be off for a good meal, whatever. You can't do this, you can't do that. And he was so commanding, this bloody bloke, in actual fact, and so on. So in fact, finally got out of him that he had been to see his brother, who I now know by having researched myself was the Prince of Lip in Castle Lip over the German border, and he had been and probably had done it fairly frequently, had gone to and fro, and I handed him over to Colonel Setter, to Major Setter, as he was then.
He was then, yes.
Yes. Who spoke the language, you know, properly.
So, yes, but what was he doing going back and forth to
Germany? Well, to see his brother.
Just to see him.
Well, do you do this midnight on, you know, awful winter weather, bad weather, and so and so, and that. But he'd probably, you know. Of course, he was, as you know, as you may know, his wife, Philomena, got, well, the Parliament had problems with him and made a ruling that he would never be able to wear the uniform at all, ever. Although he did come to the Queen's, what was it? Oh, it was a Jubilee year a little while ago,
yeah.
You know. He did come to that in uniform, but in Holland it was passed by the government in Holland that he could never wear Dutch uniform again. He wasn't fit to do. But I arrested him and sent for Colonel Setter, well, Major Setter.
Major Setter then, yes.
Yes.
That's right.
And incidentally, Major Setter once in a place called Bruges.
This is early in the war.
Much earlier, yes. Place called Bruges. Oh, very early.
Let me put a date on it. This must be this must be end of June, maybe early July.
Yeah. Oh, you cut off. Yeah. But to me, the ground was so bad to dig down, you couldn't. You could only just get a little bit down. So what we did was dig about 2 or 3 feet deep, and then put the stuff that you got from your digging on the top. So it was a very insecure thing to get into yourself, because you invariably wanted, if you could, well, I used to do it, oh, very good at it, you know, an L-shape effort, so that one person could be down in the thing and could sleep, if necessary, in the L-shape, the little bit going off, where you could cover it over, you see, and then you would be just standing there with the bloke with his feet there, you know, sleeping or whatever it was. Or similar, if it was too bad, you know, snowing or something like that, you could put things over one half and put earth on top, and he would be snug inside, and the one bloke would be having to stand there looking out at nothing. But at this particular time, in Bruges, they had, which, strange enough, I never had them before, but they had what we call the thing that went, in other words, a machine working itself up into a frenzy, and then throwing bloody bombs just anywhere to...
Nebelworth.
Wipe over the thing.
Nebelworth, as well, eh?
Well,
Moaning Minnies.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. And this happened when we got to a place called Bruges, fairly early in France, in actual fact. Fairly early. And we dug a place, we dug a thing, we dug a thing. Yes, that's right. I know it's Bougie. Bougie always reminds me. B, my initials. I was going to get married. Silver plate in the place was unbelievable. Because it was early on in the... So we've gone back quite a while, because that was early on in the thing. Mm. So somebody gave me as a wedding present, it would be, was a huge silver salver with B and a crest and everything. Joe, just a job for my, you know, wedding, I'm doing it, you know. So we kept that hanging about for a little while, you know, this bloody thing going. And then Jono, no, what's he called? The cook I tell you about, he was a very good cook.
Yes, from the Midland Hotel.
From the Midland Hotel, that's right. He's I'll show you a photograph of it. I thought, oh, just a job. He can serve us up. And because we lived well, we lived better than the officers and so on, so because we had a good cook and because we looted, we went out of our way to get, you know, even things like.